It's all been crystal clear.
Or comments.
Yes?
I guess I have a question. The process of focusing on the physical part is first you breathe, you focus on your breath, and then you relax on the out breath, and then you continue focusing on the breath, and at some point you switch to focusing on your body, physical sensations. Or do you do that right after, just a couple breaths?
No. The primary, the kind of the home base for the meditation practice is the breath, it's the breathing. And we keep, that's the home base, or the anchor. We stay there. And we with some interest, with some devotion, dedication to stay with the breath and to relax with the breathing, become present and learning how to stay in the present moment with the breath. And what we notice when you do that is the mind wants to be in the past or in the future or in fantasy or whatever. And staying with the breath counters that tendency to be lost in thought and trains us slowly to stay in the present moment. However, when some physical sensation arises that's more compelling or stronger, the usual expression is more predominant than the breath, then we let go of the breath and bring our full meditative attention to rest on that physical sensation as long as that sensation is predominant. So that sensation becomes the meditation. And then when it's no longer predominant or when it's gone away, then we come back to the breath because the breath is the home.
But it wouldn't necessarily be a physical sensation. It could be like a...
It can be anything. So the analogy, the analogy I use is that of a spider's web. For this practice, a spider will sit in the, in the middle of the web, waiting for something to happen. And when something happens on the web, the spider leaves the center of the web and goes up and attends to whatever's happening elsewhere and eats the fly that's stuck on the web. So we sit in our web of our life, the mandala of our life, and there's all these experiences that are included in that mandala. There are our physical experiences, including sounds, all the senses. There are our emotional life. There's our motivational life, the motivations and reactions we have. There's our cognitive life and our thoughts and stories we tell ourselves. And that all those things make up the mandala of who we are. And we place ourselves at the center, which is staying with the breath. We make that the center of our web. And then when something becomes really predominant, then we leave the center and we attend to whatever is predominant. So if it's physical sensation, that becomes the practice. If it's emotions, that becomes where we focus the practice, the mindfulness on. If it's thoughts, that's where we focus the attention on, the cognitive world. And what we're training ourselves to do is how to bring a kind of presence, a non-reactive, peaceful presence to our whole experience of being a human being. So that whole... anything that might happen to us as being a human being, we know how to meet it with a non-conflicted, non-reactive presence. So, and that sense of having a non-conflictive, non-resistant, non-reactive presence becomes a real treasure or a real a home where we can rest most of the time or a lot of the time. And that's very different than the way most people are. Most people, most of the time, their awareness and their focus is oriented towards objects of attention. Thinking about the future, thinking about the past, this desire, that aversion, that fear, getting that thing or whatever, that conversation we're having with someone. And there's always something that we're engaged in with the mind. And if we're lost in that engagement, we can lose touch lose a sense of the kind of innate possibility of being at peace with ourselves and the world. That's has to do with a kind of presence that's always actually there, but it gets swamped or covered over by all the kinds of preoccupations we might have. So as we learn to have this meditative awareness that learns how to relate to everything, and you need to learn how to relate to the whole mandala of who we are. What we're learning is also this capacity of staying this non-conflictive, peaceful presence in the midst of whatever happens. Is that helpful in response to you?
Yes. I thought the purpose of, like, last week of focusing on the physical was to actually go to the physical, but actually I guess the purpose was to learn that when a physical distraction comes up, to go there and then come back, return.
Yeah, there's no need to be concerned about coming back. You simply go and you hang out with a strong physical sensation as long as it's predominant. So if there's a strong, for somebody sitting here and you have knee pain, you want to go there and really get to know the knee pain and hang out with it as long as it's compelling, as long as it's strong. And investigating it, and we investigate a number of different things. We investigate, for example, what actually is it? Because many of us keep ourselves, many of us through our concepts and ideas of things, keep ourselves removed from the direct experience. And so what we want to do is get below the concepts and ideas we have and actually feel it directly as an experience and hang out with it and sense it. And then the other thing we want to investigate is what our relationship is to it. Because in addition to our ideas about it, we actually can have relationships of aversion or desire or clinging or resistance to it. And all that is extra. And that non-conflictive, peaceful presence that we all can have allows something like pain to be there without getting into a relationship of resistance, or just allows the pain to be there in a peaceful way. It's actually possible. So we investigate that, and so that we develop this meditative awareness that simply allows it to be there. And as we get to know it better, a number of things might happen. It might go away. If it goes away, then we simply come back to the home base, which is the breath. Another thing, or it might go away, but some other physical sensation has taken its place. Then, rather than going back to the breath, we go to the stronger physical sensation. Or we're staying with the knee, and then some other physical sensation, like some, the kids playing outside, becomes really loud, and it's much more compelling or predominant than the knee pain. So we forget about the knee pain and we bring our attention to that which is strongest, wants our attention the most. And it's possible to spend a whole period of meditation and never pay attention to your breath, because you're so much in the present moment that you're just aware of all these other things which are really compelling. But if nothing is really compelling, then we go back and use the breath as a place where we're honing our awareness, honing our ability to be in the present moment. Make sense? David?
Yeah. Sometimes when I meditate, I find that when I do that, my attention bounces very rapidly from one thing to another, or I find myself splitting my attention.
Yeah.
Two or three things.
When I first was introduced to this practice, I had kind of similar, somewhat similar difficulty. I thought the instructions was to pay attention to everything, which it is, in a sense. But I interpreted it to mean pay attention to everything at the same time. And so I thought, well, I had enough smarts to realize that was, you know, not possible. I said, okay, I'll just pay attention to all the sounds in the monastery. And I thought I had to pay listen to all the sounds at the same time. And so my mind was just chasing all these sounds, trying to be attentive to all the sounds in the present moment, and I got a headache. So I went back to my teacher and said, you know, this, I got a headache. And he said, oh, you misunderstood. You pay attention to only what's the most predominant thing in the present moment, not everything. And if something arises, so if the kid's outside is the strongest sensation, strongest experience in the present moment, you bring a kind of, you kind of place your attention there and really listen to the kid's play. And then if say some wonderful feeling of delight arises in the body, and it's really strong, compelling, then you bring your attention and really place it there. So it's kind of like if you're at a party and you're kind of going around, you know, saying hello to a lot of different people, you can go around kind of quickly and shake a lot of people's hands. Some of us have the experience, you know, we go to shake someone's hand and it isn't, you know, they're there to say hello, but as soon as your hand is in their hands, they're already off to someone else and you get this limp kind of thing. It doesn't really feel very satisfying. And then we know what it's like when someone's really there for us and they connect with us fully, they're standing there and you really feel their presence. Or we have a conversation with a friend and we know that person was really present for me, as opposed to, that person wasn't really present. So we want to develop and bring that kind of presence to whatever's predominant. So not just to kind of casually kind of, you know, everything at once, but rather find what is the strongest thing here that's happening. And if nothing is obviously the strongest or the most predominant experience, then just choose the breath and bring real strong presence to the breath until something else becomes really clear and obvious. Does that make some sense? Yes.
Where I find I have trouble is getting to a place where I start confusing thinking for awareness.
Oh, yes. Confusing thoughtfulness with awareness. Awareness is not thoughtfulness, is not thinking about what's going on, but rather experiencing it directly. So if I put my hand on my thigh, I can feel the warmth and the pressure directly, and I can also think about it. Oh, there's my hand, and it's pressing. But what we're primarily doing in mindfulness is sensing. It's kind of a sensory awareness practice. Does that make sense?
Yes, but it's not just physical sensation. There's another piece.
Meaning? So listening to the music now.
Yeah. That's part of this moment.
Yeah. I mean, recognizing, oh, this is music.
You would have thought.
Yeah.
So
no.
The noting is the thinking.
Oh, sorry?
Knowing.
Knowing. There's a recognition of what that is.
That starts to get to naming it and closer to thinking.
Right.
I guess I don't see that as physical sensation.
The sound. Physical sensation is just kind of a Buddhist way of saying any sense experience with any of the five sense doors. The sense doors being our physical senses.
Could extend my definition.
So the part of the purpose of a mindfulness meditation is to discover our capacity to be at peace with ourselves, at peace with our world. And as we become more mindful and more aware of ourselves, one of the surprises for many people is to realize the degree to which we're not at peace with ourselves, that we're in conflict with ourselves. There can be self-criticism, there can be shame, there can be feelings of unworthiness. Some aspect of ourselves is something we don't like. Or there can be, it can take another form where the kind of violence we do to ourselves or to the world takes the form of a lot of ambition, trying to do all the projects in the world and get the most amount of money and status and get ahead. And we're kind of driven a lot. And that drivenness to get sometimes covers up our capacity to be at peace. A very nice parable that the Buddha gave. The Buddha once asked some of his students, if a man is struck by an arrow, would that be painful? And his student said, oh yeah, Buddha, that would be really painful to be struck by an arrow. And then he said, if that person then is struck by a second arrow, would that be even more painful? And they said, oh yeah, that would be even more painful. And then the Buddha went on and said, it's the same with our own life, that there is suffering, there's pain that comes with just being a human being. We stub our toe, we break a leg, people we love die. There's a lot of things that happen in our life which are either physically or sometimes emotionally painful. But then there's another level, which is the second arrow, which is our reaction and response to this primary event that's happened. We get angry, we get resistant, we get self-critical, we get critical of others, we cringe, we tighten up and get tense around things. It's a second arrow, the way in which we react to what has happened. which is the primary area of healing that Buddhist practice is trying to address. Buddhism is not trying to protect us from all possible sufferings that come with being a human being, but rather to learn how to be in the world with its joys and its sorrows in a graceful way. And a graceful way means to allow these things to exist, the joys and the sorrows, without us adding a second arrow onto it, a second arrow of clinging, of aversion, of desire, of confusion, but simply allow it to be there, and in allowing it to be there without the second arrow, to learn how wisely to respond. So in learning to be present for our breath, our body, our sensations, our emotions and our thoughts, one of the things we're learning to do is how to be present for all these things in an uncomplicated way, not to add on top of them the second arrow, just to let it be there in and of itself as it is. In order to do that, we have to learn how to be in the present moment. And the present moment is a place where many people don't spend much. All of us spend all our time in the present moment, actually. But most of us don't know that. Because our thoughts are somewhere else. And one of the kind of definitions of what we're trying to do in mindfulness practice is to have our mind and body be in the same place. If you come and sit in meditation and you're thinking about what happened at work today, your body is here and your mind is at work still earlier in the day. And to have that fragmentation is not a very healthy thing for any of us to do. And it's very healthy, and the only place you can find real peace is if the mind and the body are in the same place. So we're training ourselves in meditation for the mind and body to be in the same place, which is here, right now, in this body, at this time. And if we can do that, then we can also start paying attention to some of the ways in which we react and respond. We relate to what happened in the present moment. If you're only thinking about the past, you can't really be aware of what's happening in your reactions and relationships to what's going on in the present moment. So to free ourselves from that second arrow. And actually, most suffering that most people experience in life, the great majority of it, has to do with the second arrow. The second arrow is what we add to the situation. It's not inherent in the situation itself. So with that, let's start with a short sitting, short meditation. So taking a comfortable but alert posture. Gently closing your eyes. And then taking a few deep breaths to begin. As you breathe in deeply, connecting to your body. And as you breathe out, relaxing your body, relaxing into your seat. And then let your breathing breathe itself naturally, whatever way it wants. And it's also nice at the beginning of a meditation session to relax some of the tenser muscles in the body. It might be possible to relax the face, the forehead, the eyes, the jaws. It might be possible to relax the shoulders a little bit. Or at least to send a wave of kindness to the shoulders, the tense shoulders. might be possible to soften the belly. It's very useful in meditation to keep a soft belly. For some people, it's very hard to keep the belly relaxed and soft. But at least in the beginning, when you first sit down, for at least for a few moments, to relax it. And then with whatever sensing, whatever ability you have in your body to sense and to feel with your body from the inside, become aware of the body breathing. Become aware of what the body feels like when the body inhales. And when it exhales. Letting go of your thoughts and concerns, letting go of the day, letting go of conversations with people, letting go of anxiety of the future. Letting go of any preoccupations in the mind. And dropping down into your physical body to feel the rhythm, the alternation of breathing in and breathing out. When you find yourself caught up in thoughts, let go of your thoughts and come back gently to your breathing. There's no need for any commentary or any judgments or opinions. Just in the most matter-of-fact and simple way possible, come back to the simple physical experience of breathing in and breathing out. The physical experience of breathing in and out is always happening in the present moment. letting go of your thoughts and concerns, becoming your breathing. Part of the beauty of mindfulness practice is there's no such thing as a distraction. If there's something which is more powerful, more predominant than your experience of breathing, then see if you can establish a non-reactive awareness of simply experiencing that. Noticing any tendency you have to get involved in stories and thoughts. Not resisting anything. As you sit here, bring your attention now, discover for yourself what is the most predominant emotion that's present for you, the most predominant mood. Or it might be quite subtle or it might be quite strong, but what is the basic mood or emotional state that you're in right now? You calm, agitated, content, uneasy, happy, sad, irritated, content, afraid. Calm. And whatever your emotional state might be, however vague it might be, can you bring your awareness to it so it's in a sense held in your awareness, allowed to be there in as a simple way as you can, as if it's floating in space, floating in awareness, allowed to be there, but allowing it to be there with awareness, being aware that it's of its presence. And then can you look around your body and can you find any expression or manifestation of that emotion in your body? There's some place in your body that somehow resonates or manifests that mood or mental state. Do you feel the mood or emotional state throughout your body or in your face or your torso, your shoulders, your chest, your stomach? Where is the energy of that emotion most clearly in your body? And if you can find a physical manifestation of that mood or emotional state, bring your mindfulness, your awareness, simply and directly to feel that physical sensation, that physical expression, allowing it to be there. Noticing what happens to it as you're present for it. And then you can let go of it and then come back again to your breathing. Taking the last couple of minutes of this sitting to be as peacefully and quietly present for your breath as you can. Letting each breath, each in-breath and out-breath, wash across the shore of your awareness, washing back and forth. We seem to be accompanied this evening with the end of the school year talent show. My meditation teacher in Burma, he said that when he came to the monastery to do his first extensive period of meditation practice, that he was really gung-ho, he was really serious, and he was kind of a serious, stern guy anyway, but he was kind of serious and really, he was going to do this practice in a really gung-ho way. And he was given a roommate in the monastery, this guy who was kind of a lazy, unambitious kind of guy, who, my teacher, he would sit up late to meditate, and this guy would go to bed early, and which was bad, you know, bad, but what was worse was that this guy snored. So my teacher, he got kind of indignant. You know, who is this guy? We're here in the monastery to meditate and be serious about religious practice, and this guy's not only sleeping, but he's snoring, and he's disturbing my meditation practice. And this continued, I guess, for a few nights. And then at some point he decided that rather than complaining in his mind constantly about his roommate, which is another version of the second arrow, he would take the snoring as the subject of his meditation and just do listening meditation, hearing, just listening to the sound coming. And just to be the present for the actual kind of direct sense experience of hearing, letting go of all the complications of judgments and thoughts about it, and just listening. And his entry into a deeply peaceful state of presence that kind of opened the door for deep meditative experiences for him was his roommate snoring. So it's really beautiful, as I said, that this kind of practice has no such thing as a distraction. And so, you know, the sounds, when sounds like this occur, they become just as much part of the meditation practice as anything else. In the Buddhist context, awareness is one of the sacred realities of Buddhism. And what makes it awareness sacred is when our awareness doesn't have any outside, doesn't have anything which is considered unacceptable for awareness or that is excluded from awareness. And many of us have some sense of this part, certain parts of us we don't want to pay attention to. If you have a very narrow idea of meditation, then you want to exclude the sounds because that's supposed to be something different. Or if you have certain emotions, well, those emotions, they aren't, you know, what an ideal meditator is supposed to have or an ideal person is supposed to have, and so we exclude it. Or we exclude all kinds of things from awareness, both consciously and unconsciously. But what in a Buddhist sense makes the awareness sacred is when nothing's excluded from awareness, that everything's included. And a lot of what we're learning, the skill we're learning in this mindfulness practice, is how to wisely include everything in our awareness. It's kind of like, as I said earlier, it's possible to discover a non-conflictive, peaceful presence that isn't in relationship to all the things of the world, but simply kind of flowers or kind of fills us. It can still be. It can be that we don't like things, or we want to change things, or we have preferences and all that. But most of us, when we have preferences and likes and dislikes, we live in those preferences and likes and dislikes, as if that's the most important thing. And what we can discover through meditation, that there's a whole other kind of almost reality, a whole other way of experiencing the world, where we can be at peace in our presence, and we don't have to compromise that peace because of our likes and dislikes, our desires and aversions. So to be at peace with what's going on in the world, and then from that peace, take responsible action in the world itself. So there's a famous line, or a line that I like a lot from the poet T.S. Eliot's poem called The Four Quartets, where he says, "Teach me to care and not to care." And both are needed for Buddhist practice. We need to learn both to care and not to care. Buddhist practice is not a substitute for deep, compassionate caring in the world, but it's a deep, compassionate caring that comes out of a presence that doesn't care. Hopefully that makes enough sense based on what I said so far. So we need to learn both. Our presence, our kind of sense of being centered on ourselves, perhaps we can say, doesn't have to be lost as we get, engage ourselves in the world. And most of us, we lose our sense of being centered, being at peace in ourselves when we engage in the world. So in the being all-inclusive in the awareness, one of the areas that we include in the mindfulness practice is our emotional life, is our emotions. And it isn't that Buddhism focuses on emotions, in any kind of special way. It just is part of the mandala, part of the terrain of things that we might become aware of if we pay attention to what's happening in our life. There are some people who exclude their emotions very dramatically. They don't pay attention to them. They're kind of emotionally illiterates. And then there's other people who, for whom emotions are the be-all and end-all of their life. And everything is related, the whole world is related, they relate to through the filter of their emotions and their ideas. And they have manifestos about their beliefs about emotions, and emotions are really important. In the Buddhist context, it's kind of a, I don't know if neutral is the right word, but it's a kind of, what we're trying to do in the mindfulness practice is to have a balanced experience of ourselves that doesn't give preference or avoidance to any part of the full mandala of who we are. There are some people who live most of their lives in their thoughts and have very little connection with their body. There are some people who know very little about their thoughts but are mostly living in their emotions. There are some people who are very much in their body but don't really know what's going on in their cognitive world. And what we're trying to do is not to have that kind of division, but rather to have a balanced experience of all aspects of ourselves in the practice. So emotions are a very important part of it. And I was wondering, in this last meditation we did, at the end of it I asked you to notice what your predominant emotion was and to be present for it and to feel it in your body. And what were some of your experiences in doing that? What happened when you followed that instruction? Yes?
I'm not sure that it was the emotion. I felt like I was conscious of myself making an effort. Is that an emotion?
That's effort. I think effort is not an emotion. It's one of the things we can become aware of.
Then it would be, and struggle is not an emotion.
Well, struggle is usually closely connected with some emotion. We don't struggle unless there's some kind of emotion. So you need to look a little bit more closely and see what else is going on in that sense of struggle.
More with my body sitting up straight.
Uh-huh. Could be.
Difficult.
Uh-huh. My latest emotion was anger. Uh-huh. And when I become aware of it, it seems to lessen the anger. I could do that
a lot. What happens often? Sometimes an emotion lessens. It's quite common. Sometimes it'll get stronger when we bring awareness to it. It's not our task to decide which way it should go. However, it's quite common for an emotion, especially a so-called negative emotion like anger, to lessen, because what fuels the anger is our involvement with it, our stories, our ideas, all these ideas. We fuel it with our relationship to it. Awareness, simply holding an awareness, allowing it to be there, but without fueling it. If it doesn't have fuel, if a fire doesn't have fuel, the fire cools out. So if our anger is not getting fueled, it will spend itself out. It'll cool itself out. And part of the power of mindfulness practice is that those things in our life which are being fueled by our interaction with them tend to unwind themselves, relax themselves with the mindfulness practice, and then we discover a whole different level of well-being that's possible that doesn't have to do with being fueled by anything. And this is what a lot of people don't know. Some people only think that their well-being or their happiness is dependent on getting some kind of input from the world, from doing certain activities or having certain things happen to them. And so we're always looking for things to kind of get us kind of up and high. And conversely, we think that, then the world is the cause for our unhappiness, and we're looking out for those things we're afraid in the world. when we're not fueling, or when we discover, it's possible to discover a whole a level of well-being that's not dependent on fueling conditions. And some people have to go through a period of being kind of neutral for a while, kind of bland for a while, because they're so used to having, I call it the caffeine of the soul. They're so used to having all this input from outside to kind of get their energy up, that they don't know what it's like to have the natural energy of well-being that's there if we're not kind of constantly inputting from the outside. So I'm going on and on, but your observation was quite good. Yes?
When I try to name a feeling that I have, I can't find it. It doesn't come to mind. I don't feel it. So what I kind of did was just feel it and not give it a name. Just give it some space. And whatever it is, got stronger. But some of the tension over here got less.
Uh-huh. Great. That's beautiful. That's nice. Very nice. It's very useful to name, especially emotions as they occur, but we don't want to spend any time trying to figure out what the right name is. And if you don't know, you can just do a generic name like, I'm having a feeling. Feelings are happening. But as you become more familiar with your inner life, I think it'll become, as you become more emotionally literate, you'll get to be familiar with the vocabulary of words that make sense. And it's amazingly how precise words can be. You know, we have a huge range of words in English language. And as we become more sensitive, about thinking about it, because we become more sensitive, we can distinguish between anger and irritation and frustration and wrath and fury and complaining and, you know, all these kind of subtle variations of aversion that we might have. And but you don't need to spend a lot of time analyzing it. Yes?
Like naming those feelings or physical sensations,
is that thought? What's a kind of thought? To have it, to make a mental note, oh, that there's anger or there's sadness or there's joy, is a kind of a thought. But it's using a thought for the purposes of being more present rather than having our thoughts kind of go off and think about something else or get more complicated. So it is kind of a thought. But it's the most, maybe one of the most simple kinds of thoughts we could have in terms of mental articulation.
So, thoughts are okay. You're saying these kind of thoughts are okay.
Yeah, all thoughts are okay. But don't think until next week. Next week we'll talk about how thinking is included as part of the meditation practice. Some people who meditate have this idea that a sense of opposition between our thinking and our meditation. And any idea of opposition will create struggle and tension and difficulty. Part of the sense of sacredness that includes it all also includes our thoughts. So, but we have to understand how to include thoughts, how to include the world of thinking as part of the meditation without getting swept up in thoughts and lost in them. So next week. So emotions are an important part of anyone's life, or most people's lives, and they become important, sometimes an important part of a life of meditation, of mindfulness practice. And so we need to learn how to be present for our emotions in a way that doesn't add a second arrow to them. Be present for them in a way that doesn't fuel them or get entangled with them, but simply what we're looking for in this kind of practice is how to have uncomplicated emotions. Any and all emotions are allowed. And one of the beautiful things, where some people find a tremendous relief to do a mindfulness meditation, because it's the first time in their life that they feel they have permission, unconditioned, uncompromised permission, to have whatever emotions and feeling the body and the mind wants to generate. It's all okay to have. You can feel whatever. You can have the most horrid, you know, fury and anger and despair, and you can have the most wonderful bliss and joy, or you can have the most mundane kind of la-di-la kind of emotions, you know. It's all allowed. You don't have to kind of censor anything. But what we're trying to do, what we're looking for, is how to have an uncomplicated relationship with them. how to allow them to be there without fueling them or denying them or repressing them. There's a world, you know, there's one possible one relationship some people have to emotions is they repress them. And they shove them down and they're not really aware of them. And that doesn't really work. It just tends to come back in unhealthy ways. Kind of simplistically obvious alternative to that is to express your emotion. And for example, to have catharsis. And there's a whole therapy of catharsis from the 70s, for example, that was quite popular until therapists discovered that catharsis was overrated. It has its place, but if you're constantly catharting and expressing your anger, they found that it just made people more angry rather than helping them kind of come to terms with their anger. So expression itself is not always so useful. But what the mindfulness practice offers is an alternative to both, and that is to give us full permission to feel the emotion that's there, not to repress it, but we also don't have to express it. We don't have to act on it. We don't have to fuel it or get involved in it, but rather we can feel that emotion coursing through our system, through our body, in its full glory, in its full power, whatever it is. And it's very liberating. It's very, for some people, phenomenal relief to have this wonderful, safe place where all these emotions can just come flowing without being censored by all the, for whatever kind of censor we have, whether it's internalized social messages we get or personal ideas or values that we have. So mindfulness is about when there's strong emotions, just allow them to be there. And when an emotion is predominant, when that's the strong experience, the most compelling experience of the moment, that's where the mindfulness goes. We do mindfulness of emotions at that time. Now, how do we do that? How do we bring our mindfulness to our emotions without getting entangled with them, without getting fueling them, identifying with them? There are four aspects to mindfulness of emotions. And these four aspects don't have to be, four different things, but four angles. The first is it's very important to recognize our emotions when they're occurring. And this, for some people, is a huge undertaking, just to simply to recognize what's going on. When I first started my meditation practice, I would go on these seven-day retreats. And I was a person, I had a self-image that I wasn't supposed to be angry. I wasn't, and so when you have that kind of self-image, that kind of idea that you're not supposed to be angry, is not, who you are, then sometimes what happened to me was that I couldn't see my anger when it arose. I wasn't supposed to be angry, so I was blind to it. So during these seven-day retreats, the first few days were quite difficult for me, and the frustration would build, and the frustration would go into kind of an anger. But I refused to notice it. Oh, everything's fine, thank you. Until finally the fourth day of the retreat, the anger and the frustration was so powerful that it was the only thing happening, that I would finally have to just give up, admit this is what's going on. And finally when I could recognize and admit that what was going on, that's really when the meditation retreat would really kind of begin. Just simply the recognition, this is what's happening, is a big deal. And in daily life, where we're kind of busy and preoccupied, it can be quite a challenge to really notice our emotions as they're arising, as they occur. So the recognition of it, to take the time to recognize, this is what's going on with me. The second aspect of mindfulness of emotions is to allow them to be there. And this is also can be quite hard because we have judgments about emotions. We have, both positive and negative judgments about it. You suddenly feel a lot of joy, and the judgment is, I deserve it. It's about time. Let's just really get into it. Let's kind of hold on to it really tightly. Let's do something with it. Or you feel some kind of negative emotion in your meditation, and the judgment is, that can't happen. That's not supposed to happen. I hope no one notices. So we don't. What we're trying to do is simply allow it to be there without either holding on to it or making it different than what it is, but simply allowing it to be there. Give it complete permission to be as it is. The third aspect that's very useful is to name it. It's not necessary to name an emotion as part of mindfulness practice. But it is very, very useful to do it. The articulation sometimes creates a little space in the mind, in the heart, so we're not so entangled with it. And if we're not so entangled with it, then there's a little bit more space for it, allow it to be there. And the ways in which we fuel it and get entangled begin to lessen. And we have some perspective or some spaciousness around the experience, the emotion. It's kind of like the old fairy tales, where if you name the dragon loses its power. Or in some countries, I think in Africa, you didn't tell anybody what your birth name was, because then they would have some power over you. That was kept very secret. So naming emotions has that kind of takes the power away from the emotion, not in a negative sense, but the power it takes away is the power of our identification with it, our entanglement with it, and that's very useful. And it's a lot easier to be present without getting lost in the story of an emotion if we have that little bit of distance that comes from just naming it, articulating, oh, this is what's happening. So there's recognition, there's allowing, there's naming. And then the fourth is investigation. Once you kind of allow it to be there and just experiencing it as it is, then to bring a sense of curiosity, a sense of investigation, to get to know this emotional experience is better. And what does it really feel like to have this particular emotion that's occurring? And one of the things we're very interested in mindfulness practice is to how it is experienced in the body. What's the physical manifestation? All emotions have a physical component part. If you didn't have a physical aspect to the emotion, you wouldn't know you were having that emotion. Fear, we might be contraction in the stomach. Anger might be tightening of the shoulders or the jaws. Happiness might be kind of a nice relaxing feeling in the chest or in the cheeks. There's some place in the body where we feel emotion. We say in English to be in touch with our emotions, and it's literally the case. We can be in touch with them through our tangible experience of what's going on. And our physical experience of an emotion is not the story around the emotion. Who did what to who and what I need to do about it and all that. The physical experience is just an experience in the present moment. And what we're trying our best to do in meditation is not to be in the story, but to actually see and feel what's happening in the present moment. So if you start feeling the emotion as a physical experience, then we're doing that. Also, the physical experience of an emotion is often a lot easier to be with than the more emotive parts of it, which are often connected to stories. And so in terms of giving space to really feel intimately the emotion, the body is a great avenue or vehicle to that. You can really feel your emotions and let them unfold in whatever way they want best if we feel them as physical experiences, if we let the body be the container for the emotion. If we let our stories be the container for the emotions, then it's like, oh, this is going to be overwhelming, I can't do it, or this is confusing, or whatever kind of, you know, our stories are and ideas around it. And it can be very constricting and confining to let our stories be the container for our emotions. But if we let the body be the container for the emotions, you'll find, after a while at least, that the body is has infinite capacity to feel the emotions and let them move through us in a healthy way. I'm fond of the fact that the English word emotion has the word motion in it, and the E as a prefix means out. So emotion, kind of literally in the etymology of the word, means to move out. It's something in motion. And what happens to many of us is we don't allow the motion part of the emotion to work because we added the second arrow, we've gotten entangled in it. So for example, resentment is frozen anger. It doesn't have a chance. Resentment, you know, the anger is not moving. Grief can be that way sometimes. There's good grief, which is flowing, which is great, and then there's so-called bad grief, which is frozen grief, where somehow our judgments, our evaluation, our embarrassment, our shame, or whatever, our anger, is somehow keeping that grief kind of frozen. When we start feeling the emotions in the body, and just feeling intimately where we feel our grief, or our sadness, or our joy, or our delight, the body itself is not an idea, or is not, the body itself doesn't freeze anything, but rather if we let the awareness hold it in the body, you'll find that it begins to dissolve, it begins to open, it begins to flow, and begins to move. You know, for example, if you feel really kind of, if someone is feeling, for example, a lot of sadness or grief, if someone came over, perhaps, and put their hand on that person's heart, just simply feel, having someone care and feeling their caring hand on their heart can dissolve some of the resistance in the body. And then we kind of pour out the grief and we start crying or whatever. To somehow to do that for ourselves with our awareness and simply feel in our body with our tender awareness what is actually happening in our body with the emotion is very, very healing. Now, we're not in pure mindfulness practice, we're not looking for healing exactly. What we're looking to do is to develop a capacity to be aware or present without needing it to be any different. How to be present in the present moment for whatever is there and allowing it to be there in an uncomplicated way. One of the ways we can complicate it is to want it to be different. You know, or even to want, okay, here I feel my frozen resentment. What I really want is to let it be released. And so we try to do the meditation in such a way, let me try to release it. Let's see if I bring my attention to it and feel my body, maybe I can release it. To have that kind of intention in the mind is to be complicated. And what we're trying to do is be so uncomplicated that we can, in a sense, allow whatever's happening to be there forever. Let it be, I give up, it's fine, let it be there. And let me just be fully mindful of this as it is. The paradox is if you do that, it'll move. It'll change. So we're trying to have a presence that doesn't need to have any change. But if you do that, you'll change. So you need to be a little bit more mindful of how we might complicate it. We want to be really uncomplicated about what's going on. It's really beautiful to let it's kind of like giving ourselves to ourselves, letting ourselves be ourselves. How does all that sound? Does that make sense? Does it sound complicated? Or?
Paradoxical?
The instructions about mindfulness and emotions?
Kind of keep running into paradoxes as I go into this. I try to feel something, and when I'm feeling it, it kind of just turns into vibration or humming or something, and I can't really identify it anymore, and then it just kind of fades away. So
great. That's great.
Something which should be really clear, really deep—it's just kind of turns into dust as soon as I touch it. So
maybe some of the things we think that are so solid and so consequential are quite ephemeral, if we really pay attention to it, and that's very valuable to learn that. So it's good. That's good. Let things—you know—if that's what happens, if things fade away and turn into vibration, let them do that. You know, and if they get bigger, and if you find yourself thinking something gets bigger and bigger and more powerful, let it do that. Your job is not to be concerned about what happens. Your job is simply notice what happens. Any you want any clarification or is that anything? Yes.
I'm confused by the putting all of your attention to the distraction.
Sorry?
I'm a little bit confused by the instruction about putting all of your attention to so whatever's drawing you, like music, you know, thought. I'm a little confused by that because I thought I was constantly trying to come back.
To the present moment?
Yeah.
To what's most predominant in the present moment.
So
the music is really strong. That's what's happening in the present moment. And if you have some idea that I'm supposed to be with my breath, but this is really this loud thing that's really grabbing my attention, then you're setting up a tension between where you think you're supposed to be and what's really going on. And we don't want to be involved in that kind of tension.
Is there a risk of starting to jump around because your attention goes to this and
that? There is some risk. When a person is really deeply settled in the present moment, there can be a sense of kind of just a choiceless awareness of just kind of floating, in a sense, all the different things. But what we're trying to do is find out what the most predominant thing is and then bring kind of a full presence to it and really get to know that well. So there's some development of concentration and presence and stability on that thing. So, and if there's two or three things happening that are kind of equal intensity, then just choose one of them. Flip a coin or something. Just choose one of them, and just and then to develop your, you know, look at that really carefully. Does that make sense? And if you have any doubt about what you're supposed to be paying attention to, just go back to your breath. The breath is the great default. Just, you know, your breath. You know, if you have any question, you know, where should I be? What, you know, I'm not sure. Go back to your breath until something becomes really clear. The breath is a great place to be. If all you did was mindfulness of breathing, it would be to your benefit. So if you really want to make all this, if what I'm saying is beginning to feel kind of complicated, you can simplify it for yourself by just staying with the breath until something becomes really, really obvious that it wants your attention. Yes.
So with the music, if you're noting that you're hearing music, but then you find yourself wishing the music would stop, that's when you're getting into evaluating or resisting it.
Right.
That's when you would come back to either noting the music or the breath, so that you can let go of that resistance.
Right. 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 You just let go. If you can, you let go of the evaluation, and go back just listening. And the music might last for a long time. And it might be, it's possible to get very calm and centered listening to music or listening to sounds, if that's what's going on. Also, what might happen after a while, it no longer is so compelling, you know, and so it might not have lessened in intensity, but it's no longer really grabbing your attention so much, and then you can go back to the breath. And next week we'll talk about thoughts, as I said, and then things like evaluations and judgments. You'll understand a little bit better how to include them as part of the practice. Yes, Bali.
Since we're on the subject of errors, I work with this notorious alcoholic. He was a Indian, his last name was shot with two arrows. And when I tried to look into him being able to return to his reservation, it was a whole clan. There was a lot of people with that last name.
Yeah, I don't know, but you can tell him the Buddhist story. Tell him to come back and see you when he's one arrow. So let's do another sitting. Oh, yes. Last.
I don't know whether you want to talk about this now or next week. It's about death music. As I pay attention to it, those lyrics, at first I hear it as music and song, and then as I pay attention to it, it becomes, I get clear about what they are singing, and, you know, it's just a song that I'm familiar with.
Right.
So
what we do in mindfulness is we become aware of that reaction, and the awareness of that reaction of, you know, is that the song I'm familiar with or what, that awareness is not the reaction. So we're bringing something which is larger and more spacious, and it's in and of itself is not entangled with that concern. And then it's possible to relax and let go of those concerns. But next week we'll talk more. So if you want to take just 30 seconds or 10 seconds to stand and stretch, you may. So again, sitting up straight, closing your eyes. And then you might sometimes just very directly feel immediately right now, how are you? And feeling how you are. Can you allow it to be in here in an uncomplicated way? Can you be present for yourself as you are without resistance or judgment or demanding it be any different? Letting whatever way you're feeling exist in a spaciousness of presence. Perhaps letting yourself be relaxed about what's actually happening. And then within the body, as part of the body, become aware of your breathing. Perhaps you can become aware of the sense of presence that resides in the sensations of breathing in the body. Letting go of your thoughts and concerns. Each time you breathe, letting go of thoughts and concerns and being present for the simplicity of breathing in and breathing out. When we sit in mindfulness meditation, we do give some preference to the breath. There's a gentle emphasis. And then if something else becomes more compelling, something in one of the sense doors, or emotions, feelings within ourselves, if they become more compelling, then you can let go of the breath. And let that be the place where you cultivate mindfulness, investigation. And if it doesn't grab it, nothing else grabs you or is very compelling, be content to develop your presence in the simplicity of breathing. Breathing in, breathing out. Being attentive to your tendency to get caught up in your thoughts. Letting go of it again. Over and over again, letting go of your concerns and returning to the simplicity of just being alive for what's happening right now in your body, in your breath, in your feelings. The precious sense of being alive, feeling our own vitality and aliveness, comes with being in the present moment, in our body, with our breath and our feelings. There's very little sense of being alive, vitality, when we're lost in the past and the future of thoughts. It's so precious to be in the simplicity of our presence, with the breathing in and out. One of the second arrows, one of the ways we complicate ourselves, is by judging negatively or positively how our meditation practice is going. There's no need to evaluate or to judge how the mindfulness is going. Just very simply come back to the present moment, to what's actually happening for you right now and right now and right now. So you might, during this next week, give a little bit extra attention to your emotions, both in meditation but also outside of meditation. Taking the time to notice your emotional responses and reactions. What happens to your emotions when you simply allow yourself to feel them in the body? What are the emotions, what are the more the subtle emotions that come to play as you go through your day? It's a wonderful study to make, to be mindful of your feelings as they're occurring, as they're beginning. To be aware of the beginning, the genesis of emotions, is a great help in living a life of freedom. So thank you for this evening. I wish you all a nice week. A couple of announcements that might be... this Saturday, we're going to have a show a movie called The Color of Fear, which is...